And here we are today on the Greenhouse Podcast. We're talking about agriculture.
Career sweet spot, Steve.
Nope, we're just ag now. We're taking a hard turn. Tara is our guest, and she...
We're not taking a hard turn. It's just returning back to the original roots.
Right. Roots. Root system, green plants.
Greenhouse effect.
I get pitches like every day in email for random like greenhouse products and like
that
fertilizers.
Because they're probably good pitches, right?
Yeah.
However, clearly they've done zero research on the company themselves.
Oh, zero. I mean, they come in with a hard pitch. And it's, yeah, you're right. It's good. It's like, man, if I was in the market for fertilizer, I would definitely be buying this. Some kind of new combine tractor. Like,
I'm dying at the thought of you actually buying it now.
Yeah.
I'm not in agriculture, but in the office, like, guys,
this is just a metaphor, okay?
Steve, what's that pallet in the back?
Yeah.
Fertilizer?
They're like, Steve, but greenhouses don't have combines. No, I was kind of nervous about this interview because Tara is a dairy farmer. She also has an online business and a podcast called Discover Ag. They talk, you'd love it. It's kind of like yours where they talk about pop culture and like what's trending in food and agriculture.
Ooh, love a good blend.
But it just felt at first like, wait, is this a fit? Does this make sense for us? And the more we got into the conversation, it was like, oh, this is just the perfect conversation. I think because Tara's leaned into that career pivot where she built her own business that supports the life she's trying to create. And it seems random, but it's actually so similar to everyone who, you know, we work with at Greenhouse. So I don't know. I ended up feeling really excited about this conversation. You didn't get to be there. How do you feel?
I feel a little left out. I can't wait to listen to it though.
Yeah. Well, I think we can just get into it. So Tara talks about her backstory, how she got into this business and what it's like, but even some of the parallels to life and parenting and confidence and just like learning business skills.
Love it.
It's probably always sunny where you're at, but we've been cloudy lately and I feel good. It's crazy how much the sun affects me.
Where are you based out of?
Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's pretty sunny in New Mexico. Actually, yeah. We've been having like an unusually warm winter. We've gotten a couple snows, really nice snows. But overall, like it was, I don't know, it's been like 70. It's been so nice.
Do you ever have cloudy days out there?
Yeah, I mean, not a lot, but we obviously don't get a ton of rain or snow. But no, I don't know what our average like sunny days are, but it's a ton. My sister lived in Seattle for a couple short stints and she was like, yeah, seasonal depression is real. And I didn't realize it because yes. I've lived my whole life in New Mexico. So yeah, definitely crazy how much that has an impact on you.
Yeah, I grew up in Southwest Michigan, so we had all the lake effect and the cold and the snow there doesn't matter. Like that's actually the nice part. Snow is beautiful. Yeah. It's just the cloudy. It's
relentless,
like kind of
cloudy
overcast. Yeah.
Yeah. That would be really hard.
Where did you grow up?
In New Mexico. So Eastern New Mexico. So I'm like right on the Texas border. What's funny is even beyond the weather, like my husband and I went on a trip through Michigan, like a ton of driving. And by the time we were done with a 3-day trip, it was like, I need to see the horizon. Like we don't have trees. And so that was another thing, like just like we'd be driving and it was like literally a tunnel of trees. And like, it was beautiful. Like we loved seeing it. We were there in October, but by the end it was like, I haven't seen the sun rise or set like on the horizon in 3 days. And I need to be able to see that.
Yeah. No, that's a thing. My wife grew up on Lake Michigan. So same thing. You can just see for days, amazing sunsets.
Oh, yeah.
She's always, because we live in a woodsy neighborhood that's kind of our house is in a dip. And so the sun sets like an hour earlier than it really does, but we don't see the actual sunset. So sometimes we go out to the river or somewhere where we can see.
Just so you can like see out.
Yeah, it starts to get to her. If like a month goes by and she hasn't had that kind of wide open.
I can totally. I mean, this was like 3 days and we literally were like done.
Yeah. I mean, my friends in Southern Cal, but grew up in the Midwest, now they're always missing the green. So it's kind of interesting. They're like, it's just never changes. We don't have the seasons, but
yeah. My sister's moving right now from San Francisco to San Diego. And she always jokes that it costs so much to live in San Diego because it's the sunshine tax. But I'm like, I don't know. I like some variation in my seasons and different things. I don't know. I don't know if I could have, like, I mean, it's wonderful there, but it is very like monotonous, the same weather. It's funny. Yeah. Like, I feel like if you go back to like, I don't know, quote unquote nature, like all the biohacking things, like that is kind of what they're talking about, right? Is like that we have more of that ingrained in our bodies than we realize.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Okay. So people are going to be eager to know a little of your story because we have, I mean, we just met, but we have a lot in common in terms of kind of where we are now with a business and entrepreneurship, not really being where we came from.
Yeah.
But so much of it was about stepping more into our purpose and having more freedom and flexibility and all of these different things. So like, what did you do before work-wise and what are you doing now? Just give the synopsis.
Yeah. So I feel like it's funny that I ended up in entrepreneurship, but didn't realize I would when I was in college, because when I was younger, I was always the kid that was like starting a business or figuring out how I could do something. Like, I remember my parents bought me one year for my birthday, like a book that was like 20 ways to make $100, you know? And I was like, okay, which one of these can I do? Like, especially in like rural America, like I wasn't like putting up a bake sale, right? Like on my farm on the side of, you know, out in the country. But then when I went to college, I just very much think I was like, I have to get a degree and I like go get a job, and like did not consider entrepreneurship, which is, it just is so crazy how that, like, your mind doesn't always make those connections, especially when you're 18, like headed off to college. So I actually got my degree in environmental science and very much like got a job that was in that. Like, I was an environmental consultant, which I feel like is rare, even, you know, with your degree, that you use your degree and you do what your degree says you do. It goes to like, I don't know, maybe how my brain works. It was like, you get this and you do this. And so that was what I did for 10 years, was I was an environmental consultant. And then slowly through that.
But what does that mean?
I know, I was typing out what like consultant means. And I'm like, it means something different depending on what field you're in. So in the environmental space, what I actually did was, I actually grew up on a dairy farm. So I'm very much, you know, involved. Background is in agriculture. So my environmental consulting degree, I used it to do environmental work on dairy projects. So if you are a dairy, you know, and you need like permit and regulations, there's tons of federal and state regulations that dairies have to follow on like the environmental side of things. And so my clients, dairy farmers, would hire me to essentially like help them with all of that permitting process, talking to the regulators. You know, there would be different meetings at the state and, you know, federal levels, and kind of being that liaison between the two and just kind of assisting the dairy farmer. Because I mean, some of these permits you're talking, you know, they're massive legal documents. And so just kind of like working through them and making sure like all of the I's were dotted, all the T's were crossed kind of thing.
Was that the kind of thing that you had to actually learn after school, or did your degree actually teach you some of those ins and outs?
Yeah. So I feel like it did teach me some, as far as like on the maybe like chemistry side of things, like what I was sampling for, how it worked, like boots on the ground. Like a lot of my job was paperwork, like I mentioned, like the permitting, but a lot was boots on the ground as well. Like looking at, you know, the soils and saying like, how much nutrients do the soils need in order to grow these plants that the dairy farmers need to feed their cows? Looking at like the water chemistry, like how is water quality? That was a big thing we were always checking on, making sure water quality was really good. And so it did teach me that. As far is like anything else, no. I mean, I had to learn it along the way. And a lot of it ended up being, funny enough, like I feel like when you think of the science world, you don't think of the communication world. But a lot of it was communication. Like, okay, your regulator wants this from you because of this. And like going to the dairy farmer and saying like, this is what we have to do. And then vice versa. Like the dairy farmer's like, okay, this is what I can make happen. Like, will this fit the requirements? And so being that communicator ended up being a big part of my job.
Yeah. No, I worked in kind of high tech science for a while, and same thing. Like my takeaway was the same. That's funny. I'd never put it into words like you just did, but so much of it was about communicating, whether it was writing the paper or giving the brief or even the project management. It's like you could have these incredibly smart scientists knowing exactly what they're doing, but it would all be ruined if the communication didn't work well.
I feel like that's an ongoing problem actually in a lot. I mean, I think probably across the board in like science and tech is the communication. On the agriculture side, we have really amazing data being done by, you know, incredible teams. And I feel like there is such a disconnect of getting that information out to even the farmers and then beyond the farmers, like out to the consumers. Like what are farmers doing to be more sustainable? What are they doing to include tech in their operations? And there is just absolutely like no communication that goes out. And that is the key, is being able to like tell people what you're doing.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I derailed your story. So okay. you graduated, you're an environmental consultant helping dairy farmers.
Yes. And so at the same time, I was a new mom. I had just had my first daughter and then, you know, a couple years later had my second daughter. And I feel like I did what all millennial moms did at the time, which was join like 7,000 Facebook groups that helped you teach you about your children. Like that was just what you did at the time.
And well, this is my gripe. Yeah. As an entrepreneur, I'm like, it's so much easier to just sell like a mom product. It's like you're instantly viral, but yeah.
Yeah. Because one mom talks about it in one of these like Facebook groups and like the entire thing would go viral. And so I was in those and obviously a lot of conversation around milk. I mean, a lot of people, you know, when do you introduce yogurt? When do you switch from whether you're doing like breast milk or formula to regular milk or, and if what kind of milk is that regular milk at a year old? And so there was a ton of conversation around milk and dairy. And so I would end up, I feel like every day in the comment section being like, well, that's actually not how it goes on the dairy farm. And like, no, it's, you know, because a lot of the conversations even turn to environmental. Well, like someone would say, like, I saw something on the internet about like dairy being bad for the environment. So we're doing a different type of milk. And so I was like very quickly realized I needed a platform where I could kind of share. Like I had this unique experience where I was in the middle between dairy and like, you know, the environmental side of things. And it was a, you know, a unique spot to be in. And so I ended up starting to share on social media. You know, this is back in like 2016. So I feel like the middle days of like social sharing, it was still fairly early in the ag world, the agriculture world, to be sharing on social media, but essentially just kind of opening up our farm for people wanting to follow. And then from there, it absolutely like snowballed. I think from that first post, my very first post actually went viral. And that was a wild experience to have like your very first thing that you shared about, you know, dairy farming go extremely viral. And then it just kind of
like, what was the number at that time that made it feel viral?
I think it got shared like, I don't know, over 40,000 times. So it was pretty like on Facebook. It was one of those Facebook posts. And so it was pretty, I feel like even nowadays, if I had something shared 40,000 times, I'd be pretty happy with myself.
I know. So. I'm always like, what is the number? I don't know if it's defined, but at that time, like, 40,000, that's huge. Now on TikTok, I'd be like disappointing.
Totally. That is actually where like the eras have to be like considered. It was, you know, Facebook in 2000, I think it was 2000, end of 2015 going into 2016. So it was not in this like reels go viral and you get a million likes, right? Like it wasn't that period. It was much more like, I feel like the grassroots organic side of Facebook still.
That's cool.
And so from there, though, I feel like it's one of those things with social sharing, like you can't really predict where you'll go exactly. And like it was still so evolving that I feel like I had to try out a few different things along the way to kind of like find my niche. And then now where I have settled, I've done, you know, things from public speaking, which I still love. That's still one of my number one like kind of platforms is public speaking, to, you know, brand partnerships, which I found really quickly was not my like always favorite thing to do. To then having actually an e-course that I sold. And then now I'm like in the podcasting space and feel like I have like truly found my home and my like just where I love. And I know I feel like I skipped a lot of steps along the way, so we can like kind of back up or go deep dive on any of those. But this is where I find myself now, is in the podcasting world.
What do you like about podcasting?
I love the long form content, actually. I feel like when I started on Facebook and with a blog. And so it was very much like that, write out your thoughts, include supporting research, you know, include links and things and like just being able to tell a story. And I feel like by 2020-21 is when like reels were at their peak. And I mean, you know, a 9-second reel I have just found is not my like place. Like I don't love that. I just, it's not where I find myself like thriving. And so in 2021 into 2022, when we launched our podcast, it was like, yes, like let's bring back some like context. Let's bring back some conversation. Let's actually like engage in like some discussions versus just like a really quick hit of a reel.
Yeah. Yeah. I was listening the other day to Armchair Expert, and you know, they're also long form, but they were talking a bit about that because I forget who the guest was, maybe Trevor Noah or something, where like they had both been on a lot of talk show, like late night talk shows over the years. And they were saying how they love the long form podcasting because they were always forced to do like somehow make it amazing in 4 minutes. Like
yeah.
educational, entertaining, funny, you know, like all of the things, and like advertise their, you know, their upcoming whatever. And even though I haven't been in that world, that resonated with me. It's like, yeah, I think when you're a coach or a teacher or consultant or anything educational, it just feels like you can't do anything of value in these tiny clips. I mean, you have to some extent. Do you find that you have to do also the short form stuff for certain reasons?
I do. I feel like there's still like social media is still, you know, king as far as being able to even like grow the podcast. You know, I mean, there's other ways to grow podcasts, but it can be really helpful to be on social media as well. And so those short form content is helpful, or even taking the podcast and turning it into short form content. Like we see that so much in the podcasting space. And I don't know that it is absolutely necessary. I said there's other ways to grow your podcast and reach your audience, but it can be like one tool in a really powerful toolbox.
What's your podcast called?
So our podcast is called Discover Ag. I say we because I actually have a co-host who is a cattle rancher. So I'm a dairy farmer. She's a cattle rancher in Nebraska. And so Discover Ag is literally like discover agriculture. And so we, I feel like ag can be presented very like maybe old fashioned and a little boring sometimes. I hate to say but that's kind of how it's presented. So we have absolutely taken a different approach to agriculture. We have put our millennial female spin on things, and then we've thrown in some pop culture. And so every week we cover the top three trending news articles in the ag and food space. So very food dominated, I would say. And so just, you know, this week we're covering why celebs go to In-N-Out after the Oscars. We're covering why the attorney general is suing the largest beef packing company. So it's a very big range of things. Like, you know, there's usually one harder hitting topic and then some really fun, more lighthearted topics along the way.
That's so cool. Because, yeah, it does have even the word, or when you talk about what you do, it's almost confusing. Like wait, you do ag stuff? Like, that doesn't add up in most people's minds, but it's really interesting. It was interesting when we met because I was thinking of my friend who has a lot of online business stuff going, but they have a farm and they started a meat box subscription. Yep. And yeah, it had a very like relevant modern feel. And it was kind of cool to see that crossover of like online entrepreneur and like millennial modern business with something in the agriculture and like food space.
Yeah. And I feel like kind of in this post-COVID world, like we're living in a place where people are more curious about their food than they ever have been. Like just like that, like people are loving these direct to consumer models where a farmer sells, whether it be a beef box or something else, like directly to a consumer. So you feel like you actually get to know your farmer, or, you know, the boom even of farmers markets have just increased exponentially in the last, you know, decade or even half a decade. And so it's really cool to see that. And so I think that was missing from a lot of the conversation, especially the podcasting space. Like, I don't think there was anyone really like reaching out. You know, there was ag podcasts that were focused on agriculture within agriculture, but we kind of wanted to like break out of that and have, like I said, a lot of fun with it too, that there's cool things happening. You know, so many crazy things happen in like the food space that really shape how we choose to shop or buy things. And so it's like, it's fun topics to cover.
Yeah. And it's fun to get educated on it because it's always been hidden to the like standard average consumer. But what is your day to day? What does a week in your life look like then? You're running a farm and you have this online side of it.
Yes. So I guess my day to day, it obviously changes drastically. For the most part, I've stepped away from the consulting side of things and moved that part of my life more full time into the podcasting space. I always joke, though, that my two clients I can't get rid of are my husband and my father, unfortunately. So I have to continue doing consulting work for them, whether I want to or not. But it's nice to be able to keep my hand, I guess, a little bit in that like origin, you know, story that I have. But my husband manages day to day on our dairy farm. So backing up a little, I grew up on a dairy farm. I'm a fifth generation dairy farmer. My husband is also a fifth generation dairy farmer. We grew up on neighboring dairy farms just down the road from each other. Like just kind of a funny, nice, you know, story. We met when I was 3 and he was 5. We did not end up dating though until I was 21 and he was like 23. So much like, not much later in life, but out of childhood and into adulthood, obviously, is when we ended up dating and then ultimately getting married. And so my husband runs the day-to-day operations on his family farm, along with some of his brothers and his dad. And then my, you know, day-to-day is actually, you know, I'm home with our two girls, I actually homeschool our two girls, and then doing podcasting, all things podcasting full-time at this point in time.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So was that a, like, test and learn into it? I find it's interesting. Some personalities, they approach business as like, I got to come up with the whole thing and design it perfectly and then put it out in the world. Versus I'm more on the other side of it. Like, it's like, just start doing it and learn as you go and dive in. What does it look like for you?
Yeah. So I think, my favorite saying with my business partner is that we build our ship at sea. So there is very much, sometimes we are taking on water and we are still building, you know, like we are figuring out as we go. I will say one of the things we've always done though, when we both have had business separately and now we have, you know, we had our e-course together and now our podcast together, is one thing we've done is invest in education and ourselves. So like when we decided to podcast, we took a podcasting course and like just really immersed ourselves in that for, you know, like not for an extended period of time, not till it was perfect, but at least was like, gave us a little bit of a leg up. Like, let's learn from someone who's done this before. Same with the e-course. Like we had a very successful e-course that we grew to over 6-figure business and we took a course and was like, okay, we want to do this. Like, we know we can do this, but like, how can we get help to do that? And in today's world, there's so much information. Like, it's easy to access the information you need to like start a successful business. And so we've taken full advantage of that and like truly invested in ourselves. But then beyond that, it's like, okay, go for it. Like, if you wait till it's perfect, you'll never ever like launch that business, start that, you know, launch that product, whatever it is.
Yeah. How do you approach, I think a lot of our listeners, this resonates, where they either started a business on the side, they went all in, or they're thinking about, a lot of people are thinking about starting something. And I mean, the thing I experienced, I felt like everything in the startup world, like everything you hear about and all the media around it, is always kind of the Silicon Valley tech startup version, where it's someone who doesn't have a lot of responsibilities of like house, kids, etc. It's all VC funded. You've got all this money up front. Of course, there's downsides of that too, but I feel like there's growing conversation now, but not as much conversation around someone who's got, you know, family, house, you know, for you, a whole farm. You've got all these responsibilities and all these financial obligations, and you're starting a business in that stage of life, because a lot of people think that it's not possible. Like, it's too late. I had to do it when I didn't have those things in life.
No, I do think that's such a common thing, is like, it's too hard to start now. Like, there's too many responsibilities. There's too many things going on. And so what I did, I was working as a consultant when I, again, started sharing online, and then online, it started evolving into this business and this thing where, you know, I was taking PTO from my job to go travel and speak on stages and earn income that way. And I debated that. I had really, really struggled for, I would say, probably a year to two in that transition period, where my online business and this like speaking and all these things was really booming in this like social sharing about dairy sustainability, but then I had this actual job as, you know, dairy sustainability consultant. And I don't know if I would tell myself, if I could go back, I don't think I would tell myself to do it sooner, because I think I probably did it at the right time. But I kept feeling like I was going to like lose a piece of myself by giving up that 9-to-5 job. Like, it just felt so weird that I had gotten this degree. Like, it cost money to get this degree. I'd put 10 years into this consulting. Like, I was one of the longer standing employees. I had earned a ton of PTO. Like, it was that I was giving up a lot. I was the highest earning as far as commission goes, like bringing on clients. Like, that was something that I really excelled at, was being able to bring on new clients and like build trust with them. And so if I left, like, I was walking away from all of that. Like, there was no like coming back and starting where I was at when I left. And so it was super scary. And so I had told my husband, I said, when I start earning more online than my consulting job, I'll go full time into online. And that was like a very monetary goal, but it for me at the time, like I had responsibilities, I had children, like monetary was very much my like motivational driver at that time. And I think I had been earning more online for over 3 months. And my husband was like, you promised you would drop like the other one when you did this. And I was like, you're so right. And I actually went away to a women's retreat and just took some time to focus, like a business women's retreat, took some time to like focus, set my goals. And I came back on that Sunday night and said, I'm putting in my 2 weeks notice tomorrow. And I did. I woke up Monday morning and put in my letter of resignation from my company that I was working for and went full time online. And it was a really, really scary leap, but it was needed. It was crazy how much more my business took off after that, like after I decided to leave. Because, you know, I obviously had more time. I was doing something I, you know, was truly like loved and was passionate about. It wasn't that I didn't like my old job, but this was like more than just a job you like for me. And so things really started propelling forward.
No, I think it's cool how you built the financial. Everyone is like afraid to talk about it, especially when you're, if you've grown up in the corporate environment and you're in that, you don't talk about money a lot. So it feels harder to talk about. And I find a lot of people, just happened this morning with a friend, saying like kind of avoiding the money part, almost like it's bad to talk about money. And I was like, no, I had to do the same thing. I had to actually have a plan about how is this transition going to work? Cause I can't just go step out into making no money where maybe I could have when I was 20.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually when we created, so the e-course I created was with my current co-host, and it was for farmers and ranchers. Like when I created that, I was getting so many DMs from farmers and ranchers asking like, okay, how did you do this? Like, how did you turn this online social sharing into a business? Like, how do we do that? And in that course, I actually taught about like negotiating. Like it was something, I think it's something we don't talk about enough. And I don't think I would have learned the skills of negotiating if it wasn't for social sharing and like entrepreneurship. Like in entrepreneurship, you have to constantly be pitching yourself. And like, I don't know how many times I get told no, or I throw out a number, like a speaking engagement. Like I've had to like figure out like, oh, I've definitely undercharged. I've definitely overcharged and didn't get the job. And like that constant, like that every piece of your business, like your income is derived from like you having to ask and like go back and forth with people. Like it did actually serve me well in my consulting job, because I think I was more like in those years of overlap, I definitely went to my boss more and was like, here's why I think I like deserve more money, you know? And like, we've lost that art, I think, or maybe we've never had it, of like teaching people to negotiate in their, whether it's in your 9-to-5 job or your entrepreneurship career journey.
Yeah. Yeah. I've started to feel strongly that one of the things I'm most grateful about in getting into entrepreneurship is having to learn how to deal with money and having to sell. And because I agree, like these are just core life skills that in a lot of job settings, you just never have to learn that. And I don't know about you, for me, selling was, there were many reasons it was hard at first. I had to get over the hump of feeling like it was icky, like the word itself. I was like, and then it was also hard because I never wanted to, you almost feel like you're manipulating or like hurting the other person to ask for a price. Like what was hard for you about it?
Yeah. So it's funny because, you know, technically I grew up in like a family business. My husband is still like technically an entrepreneur as well, owns his own business. My dad owned his own business. But in the dairy world, we are price takers, not price makers. So we get told the price for milk. And it's kind of crazy. You actually don't know the price of your milk until over a month later from the time it leaves your farm. So it's absolutely like wild, the pricing side of dairy farming. Like when that milk leaves your dairy, you have no idea how much money you'll get for it. And you're talking like there's a spectrum of you could get paid. Like it's just, the dairy pricing world is nuts. And so I went into entrepreneurship with absolutely no like navigational guide point, I felt like, of doing this, even though I grew up in like a family business. And so it was very, I feel like where I had settled was I have to feel good about the value I offer to that business to charge what it was. Like whether that's speaking or whether that is ads on our podcast or whether it was selling the course, do I feel like I'm giving someone that much value for what I'm charging? And like, I know it's like probably not business sense, but it's a gut feeling. Like I have to feel good in my gut. That's like, yes, I offered you that much in exchange. Like there was an exchange there of value.
100%. I thought so many times, and you know, my friends in academia are going to kill me, but it's like, I just think business school, I always had this idea like, oh, people who go to business school, they know how it works and they know the rules.
They got the goods and we are all out here suffering.
They got it. We're just like making it up. And then you get out in the business world, you're like, no, everyone's making it up. There are no rules. And in business school, you actually don't learn a lot of those things about how to assess and set pricing and deal with all of that.
Well, and in this online space, like I just, and it's not just social sharing. It's crazy, like the virality of things. Like I know, you know, if I was telling a business, like I on average get X amount of views in a month, well, did I have one post go viral and like the next month it's half as much? Like I feel like things are really changing and constantly moving in this space. So it's really hard to like pinpoint exactly what that value is. And so it has feel like kind of like a moving target at times.
Yeah. Okay, but hold on. You said something really interesting. So the pricing, is it kind of like gas? Is it because of the retail price drives it?
No.
And that changes?
Retail price has no driver. That's what's crazy is because sometimes like milk prices will be really low and it'll make national news and people will be like, oh, so no one's buying milk. And it's like, no. There's very, very little correlation between what you pay at the grocery store and what we pay, because we have seen times where it is absolutely the highest it's ever been at the grocery store and we will be getting the lowest. So we're actually a global market at this point with dairy. And so I remember in 2007, it had been earlier than that. Oh gosh, I'm like dating myself now. It was early 2000s and I was in junior high and I remember the milk price tanked and I learned really quickly about global markets. And the reason our milk price tanked here in the United States is because New Zealand came online, as it's called, with a lot of milk. So they had a surplus of milk. And so it dropped everyone's prices across the globe. And so it's kind of it's a very complicated system. I don't know how many dairy pricing experts I have sat down and been like, explain it to me. How does this work? And they're like, well, it's really complicated. And we're on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So it also depends on how much cheese on that, like blocks of cheese are trading for on that has a big impact on prices. And then it gets even crazier. You're paid on different classes. So class one milk is like fluid milk class. You know, you got butter, you have yogurt, you have all of the different pieces, cheese, like, and then how much that's all trading for. It's really insane. That's probably more than people wanted to know about the dairy world, but it's really fascinating.
I was just learning about like when gas and things started to become variable pricing for the first time. I just assume it always was like, no, that was an invention. That was an idea of how to make it more profitable. But to you, like online courses, that must seem so simple. I feel like I'm always stressing about the price of online products. To you, that must seem like so easy.
No, it is really hard. Like, and also I feel like with the online course for us, like I really wanted to give this like value to farmers and ranchers who wanted to do this. Like so it was really hard to price. It was like, I mean, I knew what we put into it. I knew how much we had invested in it. And I was like, I obviously want a return on our investment and our time, but at the same time, like, how do we make, you know, how do we price this so that it's affordable for enough people? And it is really hard to price yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the life side of it, because, you know, so many people, especially now post-pandemic and with the way the work world is changing, I think there's an accelerating amount of people thinking about, but how can my work facilitate the life I want and how can they be more serving each other versus in conflict. And I mean, entrepreneurship is so much about creating the lifestyle you want and the, having the freedom and the flexibility. But you have, to me, you have this extra layer of it almost. I mean, it is actually really integrated into what you do, having the farm and living on it. But I'm just curious for you, what is entrepreneurship and the business online given you personally in your life?
Yeah, so I had actually always been remote. So I was remote like since starting in 2011. So actually when the pandemic hit, like nothing in my world changed. Obviously we were as a farm, also we were essential workers. So nothing changed in my husband's life either. So our day to day, I mean, we live in like very rural America out in the country. So like a lot of our day to day didn't change anyway, just because we don't, you know, I never got on an elevator to go up to my apartment. I mean, my sister's in San Francisco. So I absolutely like understood the differences in the challenges that we faced during the pandemic. But I had always been remote. And I think very quickly, though, even in that remote job, is I really valued my freedom. And I maybe that's like our generation, I think, as well, of not having that like tie to a 9-to-5. And so the more I did the online space, the more I realized that I could have like more freedom. You know, it's the funny, though, entrepreneurial thing that like you go into entrepreneurship to have more freedom, more time, set your own hours, and then you work, you know, three times as many hours as you did before, right. Which I, yeah, it definitely has happened. But there is then some control over it. So one of the things that is funny, I feel like my life is a constant pull of wanting to be at home on our farm and just like very much immersed in that. Like, you know, my husband is right, you know, outside, like can come in. We are at his job at all times. And, yeah. And also wanting to travel. I absolutely love to travel. And so I felt like in entrepreneurship, I was able to kind of find that balance. Like I was fully at home working. So, you know, if he stopped in at lunch and things like I was at home with him. And then also on the flip side, being able to kind of go and travel and do different things. Or if I had a speaking engagement in a really cool place, being able to stay an extra day and like explore that city. And then it has actually crossed over into my personal life even more, in that this year I decided to homeschool because I wanted to be able to take my, you know, kids with me. If I went somewhere, I wanted, when we're home, like we are just so immersed again in like farm and home life. And so being able to have them home with me when I'm home or traveling when I'm traveling. And so I feel like entrepreneurship has absolutely given me that access. And with homeschooling, I, you know, work kind of weird hours. Like there's times I'm putting in time after the kids have gone to bed or before they wake up. And because of that, I'm still able to do homeschooling, which is something I've really found to love. I never would have guessed I ever would have done it. Literally, if you had asked me 2 years ago, I'd been like, never will I do that. And now here I am. And I feel like it's just that freedom that entrepreneurship has allowed me has absolutely crossed into all aspects of my life.
Yeah. Yeah. And the investment you put in, it pays off longer term. It's like buying versus renting, because you said earlier, I felt bad leaving this job that I'd put so much education and time into. I'd put 10 years into it. And it's like the irony that you put all that time in, but there's not actually like a continuous ROI for that, versus you put a bunch of time and effort into, let's say, one of your courses or your podcasts, and it has this never-ending payoff that's even working while you're sleeping, or for you while you're working, maybe if you're doing something on the farm. That part to me has always been like one of the most rewarding parts.
No, I agree. And so when I was in consulting, I was hourly. Like I just, that's how I could have probably been salary if I had wanted to and like negotiated with that with my boss, but I actually liked being hourly. So it was like very much a direct correlation of like, if I put in X amount of energy, like this is how much I'll get paid. And what I quickly realized is how much I loved my commission checks, that passive income. Like I can go out and build trust with a client, do a phenomenal job with them. Like, I mean, I had really great, like, I don't want to say I was like taking, you know, their money for nothing. Like I had great rapport with my clients, but it was like other people in the company were doing work for those clients and I was still reaping like quote unquote the benefits from it. And so it's funny you say that now, because that was a piece of my actual 9-to-5 job that was not maybe totally conventional. I mean, I know people are in sales or in commission, but for me, entrepreneurship was more of like, I can go out and make like this connection with a brand and then like do ads on the podcast and build that trust. And I get to still do that in my job. It's just in a different form than it it was.
Yeah, the big one for me, I used to think when I had jobs, I was like, I think I keep being told and then noticing that I'm really good at connecting with people. And I really enjoy connecting with new people, hearing their story, hearing about what you're doing. Like, this to me is the highlight of my day right now.
Yeah.
And in the past, that was like a side thing that was sideways energy and actually detracted from, you know, my ratings and how I did in the job. And now it's like, well, connecting with you, which is totally random to most people. I mean, we have no intersection except the mutual friend we met through.
Yeah.
But this conversation and meeting you and hearing your story is producing like value that will pay off probably for both of us. And I think that part is, I don't know, I think that gets more and more exciting to me over time. Even the times when I'm not making good money, it's a funny, like, it's not necessarily that, oh, this is just great entrepreneurship because I'm making more money. Like, yeah, there's more upside, but sometimes I have not made great money, but this part is still really rewarding, you know?
No, I absolutely agree. Like, the part of my job that I really loved was working with clients. And that was actually should have been like very small piece of what I did, right? Like, clients, when you're in the environmental space, the less they hear from you, probably the better, right? That you're just taking care of things and everything's going along smoothly. But I really enjoyed talking with my clients. And I saw a meme recently that said something about how are all of you who got in trouble for talking in class too much doing, and how is your podcast? And I laughed so hard because it is, you know, some of the things that are maybe like a deterrent, like the things that I spoke to a high school class recently and I said, you know, I hate to be the person in front of your teacher that says like, do you talk too much in class? But like, what are the things that maybe are very you that you get called out on, and how can you turn that into like what you do? Like, I now talk for a living. That's what I do. I either speak on a stage, talk into a mic, talk to my community. Like, that's what I do. And so if I, you know, just thinking back, like, what is it something that makes you you, and how can you turn that into something?
I really like that question. It's a good prompt, because I was realizing last night helping my daughter with homework, and it wasn't that long. She's 8, you know, it's like, but they were, I don't know, 12 different math problem questions. And I'm helping her. And I mean, these questions are really easy for an adult, but I'm like, I wanted to gouge my eyes out halfway through. I'm like, there's so many questions.
Welcome to homeschooling.
Yeah. And I just had this moment in my head where it kind of went meta. And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah, I was never good at test taking, or like the monotonous, you know, repeat this task over and over, which for years and years made me feel like, well, I'm not good. I'm not going to get the A. I'm not successful. And so it's funny, because entrepreneurship, I think it has this vibe these days, that word of like a certain unsavory type of person. Yeah, but I think a lot of times it's just creativity. It's people who like to build something. And it's like you hustling and finding ways to make money as a kid. I was similar, and I loved solving that problem. Or even with my daughter now, I love building something with her magnetiles. But I don't love sitting there and doing the same repetitive task over and over. Some people do, but not me. And I think it's just like, that's so clear to me. Oh, I'm better made for building something than, you know, an operations repeatable task. But like in school for me, I wasn't, no one pointed that out.
I know it is crazy. I feel like it's coming back around though, where we are in a world where I think it's probably our generation is realizing like, how can we like break some of those generational things for our kids and like, and lean into it for them? Like, I've seen so many different conversations of like, you know, kind of just being paying attention, like really in tune with your kids of like, what is it that they seem more drawn to? Like, what is it they're leaving that math project to go do? And like, you know, how can you foster that, especially in this world where we aren't necessarily preparing kids, I don't think anymore, for like the stereotypical jobs. Like, I think there's just so, I mean, the world they're going to live in is going to be, I can't even imagine. Like, if you had told me when I graduated from college that I would make money off an app that didn't even exist when I graduated college, like, I can't fathom where my kids will be. And so just being able to kind of like be in tune with them and be like, okay, that's okay that like maybe math, you know, where I feel like back in our day when we're like, no, we're going to sit down and do 12 more math problems, you know, like until you get them. And now it's like, okay, like you can express yourself creatively and like do something different and actually make money and like do something with it, which is really fantastic.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir with you doing homeschooling and being an entrepreneur, but I think that's why it's so critically important now to help kids do open-ended problem solving.
Totally.
And when they're struggling with something, not just like swooping in and saving the day, but let them like work through it and let them have problems and challenges that don't have a right or wrong answer. And it's funny when that topic comes up, I get all lit up because I see the other end of it where I see adults who are struggling to find their way in their career because, you know, they were kind of shown the blueprint all along. And to your point, yeah. I mean, I can't imagine our kids are going to have such a even more open-ended work environment.
Yeah, it's so crazy because I get to see like the juxtaposition between what I do and like more my husband's job, obviously more on the farm, and like, you know, looking at the numbers in the back end. Like I have grown three businesses now, two of with my business partner to over six figures, all three of them individually. And my husband, you know, he's always like, you built those businesses with nothing more than like an idea in your mind, right? That then you either spoke into the world on a podcast, you wrote down and videoed into an e-course, or you like wrote into an Instagram post, but it literally was just like you taking something and doing it. Whereas obviously his job is much more like blue collar, tactile, like out on the farm doing something. And there's not anything wrong with either. But I think it's just that we like have to acknowledge that world we live in now where you can make a successful business that has longevity with nothing more than just like an idea that you're putting out into the world kind of. Yeah. And it's just insane to think about that. That's where we're at, I think.
Yeah. It's interesting how people will say, you know, I have this all the time. Like someone might listen to our conversation we've had here and say, yeah, okay. But it's not like everyone can just be an online entrepreneur. And like a lot of people are going to try and fail. And yes. Okay, cool. There's validity to that, of course. But the other end of it is, you know, we're talking about the wrong things with AI. Like the thing about AI to me is that it's going to take over all of the jobs that are more of the, hey, do these math problems this way. And so what's left for people to do is the creative stuff and the building and the take an idea that's just in your head and then like make it come to life. Like that's the future of the jobs. So I think that's why to me, it's not just like, oh, I prefer this type of education for kids. I'm like, no, I think we have to. I think we have to like let them problem solve and create.
No, I love that you mentioned that though, that like not everyone can just like go online and share, because I think that there was very early on in my career of even not even just social sharing, just opening myself up online, like even as simple as like sharing on LinkedIn. Like lots of people have a LinkedIn profile and it doesn't mean they're like monetizing their LinkedIn. But I had a point where I feel like I could have gone in a different direction and taken like what I was kind of doing online that I was sharing, and I was kind of becoming like a thought leader in that space, and continued in the environmental world, but still been an entrepreneur. That I was like very early on, I consulted for companies like outside of the company I was working for. And I could have pursued that absolutely and still been a more like quote unquote traditional job, but in the entrepreneurial space. I obviously went in the other direction and just, you know, found a more love and calling for this. But I think that is something that it gets missed, is like sometimes like using these tools that are at our disposal can propel your career forward in ways you could have never imagined, you know, taken like your traditional job and turned it into more of an entrepreneurial job in ways you didn't know. And so that's why I always say when you kind of like, I always say opening yourself up, like it's not necessarily social sharing for me or being like an influencer. It's more just like being engaged in these tools that we have access to and then seeing where they can like take you, because it's truly incredible where you can end up.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm still blown away every day. And it's almost the fun of it that there's always reinvention, but also the frustration. It's like I did something and then already next month, it's just kind of outdated, but yeah. Okay. So as a coach, and a lot of people listening are, again, like either starting something or thinking about it. And a common struggle we hear a lot is, I have so many ideas in my head, I don't know where to focus, or I'm trying to focus, but I keep, you know, getting pulled in different directions. So I'd love to end on a little bit of anything you do that works for you, or tips or thoughts you have on that, because you're running multiple things. So clearly you've had to work through that. How do you focus? How do you decide? What are your priorities? And what does that look like?
Yes, I'm going to steal my favorite quote from my business partner, give her credit to Natalie, but her favorite thing to say is clarity comes through action. And I have found that to be so true. When I first started sharing on social media and gaining a following, everyone was doing merch. Everyone had like their clothing line that they were launching that was in partnership with, you know, them being an influencer. And I gave it a shot and I absolutely hated it. I still have t-shirts in my office that I need to just donate. And while I could look back and say that was an absolute failure, it was an idea I had. I ran with it and clarity came through action. I realized really quickly this was not for me. And I don't say that to say like jump on every idea you have, but I feel like sometimes if an idea is there and it keeps coming back up, it's worth pursuing to see where it ends up and like where does it take you? Does it feel good? Do you continue wanting to do it? Or do you find yourself saying like, I can't believe I have to like print, you know, packaging labels and like shipping them out the next day. Like that's not what I want to be doing right now. And so there is a lot of clarity there. It's actually something I talk with my husband a lot about. You know, obviously my business is very nimble. It can change. Like my favorite word is pivot. Like we pivot constantly. I mean, that's what happens, I think, with the building your ship at sea is you do change frequently and often as things come up and things need to be changed. My husband runs a farm. It is a behemoth of a beast. Like it is a massive Titanic. You know, if he is headed for an iceberg, he is going to hit the iceberg just because it's a large business with a lot of, you know, the equipment, the cow, everything. But I do tell him, I'm like, you still, when you are unsure about something, I think that some action can help guide you. If you start going down a path, you have to at least try before just abandoning it before you even get started. And so that is always my advice. I will say, you know, obviously you mentioned like the, you know, the investment firms that invest in businesses. Yeah. Obviously, all of my businesses have been extremely low cost input, which makes things easier for me to pivot. When my business partner and I launched our e-course, I think we each invested $5,000. So we went in with $10,000 and we were able to grow to, you know, over six figures on that. Podcasting. When we decided to launch a podcast, it was a Sunday night, I'll never forget. And by Thursday, we were recording the podcast, right? Like very low investment things. And so I do understand, you know, appreciate the fact that it's easy for me to say, well, like clarity comes through action, like try a few things out. Like if we had tried the podcast and it had failed, it wasn't like I invested $1 million in podcasting, yeah. You know, it just was very low. Yeah. Yeah.
Real quick,
so I understand that, and you know, yeah. Trialing things on something like a farm or other businesses, a brick and mortar, like it's a lot more upfront cost. So I'm not like underappreciating that, but I think that there is still just some truth to like when you have so many ideas and so many things you're thinking about doing, there has to be some action. Otherwise you will get absolutely paralyzed in the beginning stages of your business.
I hope this conversation was energizing for you listening, because I'm so pumped. Like I think this conversation captures so much of why I started Greenhouse and why I love helping people figure out both career and life together. There's our job and our career, which is one thing. There's our life, which we have kind of been taught is a separate thing, but like you are one person, so you're doing both. And I love the way Tara has fused the two together. Like she had a career path that was fine, but it wasn't necessarily facilitating what she wanted her life to look like, and vice versa. So I just love the way that her story captures that essence of bringing the two together. Like what if your work actually supported what you want your life to be like and your life, you know, helped make your work better. I think her story is it's a weird one and like a perfect one that shows that. And it works. She's got a podcast that's bringing in really good income. She's got courses that bring in really good income. They have cows and they do farming. And she's not only like making income off that, but even influencing the industry in a good direction. And so, I don't know if she can, it's almost like if she can do it, well, anyone, there's a possibility for anyone to go that way. So I think that's my coaching encouragement to you listening is, don't limit yourself. Like, don't just say, oh, this is what I've done, or this is the only thing that's possible. Like, what if you could dream a little more about what would it look like for work to facilitate more of the life that I want and for life and work to work together. And for me, I can't help but also be inspired on the parenting front, because we did talk about like how the way a lot of us were educated or brought up has this like very fixed mindset. Like, here's the answer, learn it, and then regurgitate that information. Well, guess what? Like, AI can do that now, and that's going to take all those kind of jobs. So I think that it is important to let especially our kids, but even people, if you lead people at work, like, let them face the challenge, let them struggle through it a bit and problem solve, because that's actually the skill. That's the, like, that's the thing we need to be able to do. And entrepreneurship, I mean, I don't know about you, Joe. I feel that every day, like all kinds of open-ended problems that there's no playbook for it. So I think it's a good picture of that, that part of why she's been able to make this business work is her creativity and her ability to just say, all right, I'm going to take on this problem, and there's no clear blueprint, but I'm going to dive in and kind of get clarity as I work through things and try things.